Verse 20, do you see a man hasty in his words? His name is Kevin. Wait, no. Wait a minute, that was the New Living Translation. Wait, do you see a man hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Haste is spoken of a lot in the scriptures, and so, you know, he sins who hastens with his feet. And you know, and the reason is because if we're real fast to speak or real fast to act, that means that we probably didn't aim when we fired that gun. And we should always, in everything, just take one more day. I think that, you know, even in terms of, I think about purchasing things, you know. You want to buy something, you really want it, just wait one more day. You know, and then you're almost embarrassed for almost having bought it. But here we're talking about our words. If you really want to say something to so-and-so, wait one more day. You know, and we don't have to, as the verse before, in verse 11, you know, the fool who vents all his feelings. You know, a lot of times when we're about ready to vent all our feelings on somebody, it comes in haste. And we've said it, we go home, and then a great embarrassment overcomes us. And so, you know, it's okay to think before you speak. It's okay to pray before you speak. And so, you know, and so often, yeah, I do get in great trouble because my mouth moves just about a millisecond before my brain. And, you know, oftentimes, even on a Sunday morning, sometimes I'll just say some funny little thing about something, and as soon as it's out of my mouth, I don't even remember having thought that, and it is just like I heard it for the first time, too. And it is a shocking thing. I said, oh, no, did I really say that? And the answer is yes. So ask the Lord to work with your mouths, as we know from James chapter 3, that, you know, our mouths get us in a lot of trouble. And so that's always, always something to set before the Lord. And just not be so quick to speak, but rather be slow to speak and quicker to listen. And so verse 21, he who pampers his servant from childhood will have him as a son in the end. You know, it depends on how many commentators you read, how many different views you got on this verse. I'm not real sure if I can be definitive on what the whole point of this is, but I always looked at it as kind of a, you know, kind of a positive thing. You know, if you're good to your servant, he'll be like a son to you. But many commentators kind of made me look around the other side of this, in that servants are servants, and if you pamper them and treat them with favoritism, then when they grow up, they're going to expect it, and then they're going to demand an inheritance. They're going to leave their place. And so, you know, I'm not really sure how this applies to you and me, but I think that we should be careful in our favoritism of what we do with people. Just interesting. Verse 22, an angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man abounds in transgression. I don't think I need to explain that. Let's go on. 23, a man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor. Here we go again, you know, just those backward thinking things. As I bring to your attention the Chinese handcuffs, you know, you put those little things on your fingers, and you're pulling to get them off, and they get tighter. You go the opposite direction, and you're set free. And our flesh goes one direction, and the Spirit of God says, go the other. And if we go our direction, which feels natural, looks natural, what's going to happen is that this vice of this world is going to get tighter on us. But if we go the opposite direction, which is God's direction, then we'll be set free. We are taught in this day and age to have pride. Pride is something that is encouraged. Your child at school is taught to think of himself as the most important being in the room. I don't know why we have to teach people that. They already think it. And pride is the thing that we think if we lose that, then we've lost everything. Well, humility, which you've heard me say this before, but I think it's worth repeating. Humility is not thinking lowly of yourself. Humility is having no thought of yourself at all. That's what humility is, just having no thought of self. We think that, you know, we got to be humble. I'm really humble. I mean, like, I'm like the worst guy, maybe worse than the worst guy. I'm probably worse now than I was 5 minutes ago. I'm pretty bad. Yeah. But at least I'm humble. But that's not humility. That's another form of pride. And that is just to think of yourself continually. It's all about me. It's all about me. Whether it's bad or good, it's all about me. You know, true humility is it's all about others. And I don't even matter. That's true humility. And so, you know, as we read in Luke chapter 18, when Jesus, two men went to the temple and prayed, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. You know, God, I thank you. I'm not like other men. You know, robbers, evildoers, adulterers are like this tax collector over here. And I tithe, you know, I give a tenth of all I get, and I fast twice a week. And then the tax collector wouldn't even lift up his head, but he beat his breast. And he said, have mercy on me, a sinner. And Jesus says, I tell you, this man went home justified before the Lord, and the other one didn't. For whoever humbles himself will be exalted, but whoever exalts himself will be humbled. And we live in a day and age where we're taught to exalt ourselves and push. Have a dream. Believe in yourself. We have all of these different things that Disney movies tell us, and we just take them in. We take them in and says, you know what? I have a dream. I'm going to be the best tennis player that ever lived, and I'm it's a dream. It's my dream. It's me. And we take these things to the extent that, well, now I'm a Christian and I'm a tennis player. That means that this is a dream that God's given me, and God really wants me to become what I want to be. And God's going to help me exalt myself. God's going to help me. Well, when you come to the Lord, you dump all of who you are and say, okay, Lord, who are you? And I'm going to drop my agenda, and I'm going to go with your agenda, whatever that may be. Pride holds on to our own agendas. All right, verse 24. Whoever is a partner with the thief hates his own life. Okay, we'll buy that. But here it's interesting. In the New King James, as I have right here, it says, he swears to tell the truth but reveals nothing. But in the Old King James... It's like some words I've never heard in my life. It says, he heareth cursing and bewrayeth it not. Now, somebody thinks that means he swears to tell the truth but reveals nothing. What does the NIV say? Have you got an NIV? That's closer, by the way, than the New King James. Oh, go ahead. Give me the New Living Translation. That's always fun for me. That's good between the New Living and the NIV. According to what I saw in the Hebrew, that's better. And I don't know where the New King James people thought that this was a good thing to do, but I think it's much easier understood if you read Leviticus chapter 5 verse 1, just part of the law. It says, if a person sins in hearing the utterance of an oath, which that's what the Old King James talks about, the cursing, and is a witness, whether he has seen or known of the matter, if he does not tell it, he bears guilt. And so what the proverb is saying here is that you're a partner with a thief, and then it comes to court. You hear the curse being pronounced, or you hear the evidence, whatever the case, and you have an opportunity, you know, to speak the truth, and instead you don't say a word. And so you not only ruin others' lives, but, well, according to Leviticus 5, verse 1, you bear the guilt, and of course God knows. And so open your mouth if you know the truth about something. But let's do this verse backwards for a second. If you know the truth about something and you don't tell, that makes you a partner with the one. And you hate your own life because you're just bringing guilt upon yourself. And so, interesting. verse 25. The fear of man brings a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord shall be safe. Now, I don't think there's any one of us to say we're afraid of man, but our actions and our choices tell us what we fear. Our actions, our choices tell us what we reverence, what we respect. And if we're afraid that we're going to lose the respect of man by following the Lord, often we'll just say, well, we just won't follow the Lord here, and when I get home, I'll tell him I'm sorry. And that, I think that happens too often in the church today. I like what Jesus says, Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, and do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. That's pretty scary. That's one of those things where I was talking about this morning, about how the Pharisees are going, I don't get it. I don't get it. No, that's not your problem. It's you don't like it. You don't like it. And before I knew the Lord, you know, I had this little pocket Bible. Someone was always giving me some little pocket Bible, and I'd stuff it in my pocket and say, thank you very much. And I had this little pocket Bible in my little drawer there where I was living when I was back in the Navy, and I was really, really scared one night, and I reached in that drawer and picked up that Bible, because it has things little, you know, if you're afraid, go to these verses, you know. I could use a little of this, because God's going to help me feel better. And it says, "And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." I don't get it. No, I didn't like it, and it didn't apply to what I wanted to hear. Fact, we're afraid of what people think of us. We are all prone to peer pressure. We are all prone to behave differently when certain people are in the room. But we've got to understand that there's not one person that we fear that's going to be judging us. Not one person decides what's going to happen to you. Only God decides. And with that in mind, we know that this proverb makes plenty of sense. The fear of man brings a snare. A snare is a trap that you know, catches birds. It's a trap, and it happens before the bird knows what's happened. And so often in our fear of man and the decisions we make, suddenly we find ourselves trapped, and we don't even know what happened. But it began with fearing man before we feared God. Notice whoever trusts in the Lord shall be safe. Secure, or I don't know, some of you might have other words there, but whoever trusts in the Lord shall be safe. You don't feel like it's going to be safe if you trust the Lord this way. You don't feel like it's going to be safe. Back to getting those things off your fingers. It's backwards. But when we walk in it, God shows you incredible things. But you see, here's another one, just kind of the other side of it. Many seek the ruler's favor, but justice for man comes from the Lord. This one's not about necessarily fearing man, but it's about believing that man is the answer to our advancement. You find the richest person in the room and you chum up to him. You find the most powerful person in town, get to be his friend. You know, you get these, you know, I feel sorry for famous people in one respect, that famous people are the ones that everybody wants to be their friend for two reasons. Number one, so that they can say, I'm friends with Kobe Bryant. And then maybe, since Kobe is a multimillionaire, maybe if I put on the sad face and I invite him to my birthday party, you know, I get a car. Because certainly if you're friends with me, you will not be getting a car for your birthday. But it's amazing, though, how we do seek the big guy's favor when there's one big guy that we must seek his favor. So don't fear man and don't seek the favor of man. Pretty simple stuff. Pretty simple. And finally, an unjust man is an abomination to the righteous. And he who is upright in the way is an abomination to the wicked. Isn't that so? I mean, it's the most amazing thing to me. What amazes me about it, as you know, as I think about it, the reason Isaiah chapter 5, you know, woe to him who, you know, calls good evil and evil good, calls light darkness and darkness light. The unbeliever honestly, truly thinks that Christians, not all unbelievers, but well, you can see that the direction of this world, they believe that Christians are the evil ones of this world. They believe that Christians are not only evil, but they're dangerous. And I just scratching my head over this one. It just blows my mind. And just as the Pharisees thought that Jesus was dangerous, I'll tell you who's dangerous. It's those guys with those cars go boom, 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 boom. They're going to kill all our hearing. It's going to ruin us all. But Christians are dangerous in the eyes of unbelievers because I think it goes back to the shining of the light. The light shines and everybody flips out, just like cockroaches flip out when you flip the light switch on. They see light and all they do is run for the drains because somehow, some way, they can't really understand it, but it's dangerous. Light is dangerous. Run. And so it is for the Christian. Now, those who are upright, those in the way, no, sorry, the righteous look at an unjust man and we see an abomination. But I would hope that we take this and filter this through Christ. And what I mean by that is that we wouldn't be people who pull that us and them mentality. We know what an abomination is. That's a no-brainer. We know that, you know, sexual sin is an abomination. We know that drunkenness is an abomination. We know that idolatry is an abomination. We know that. However, Jesus died for every abomination, what is the word I'm looking for? Doer. Thank you, doer. That's a good word. I don't think I ever used that word in my life. But every abomination doer there is. You and I lived in abomination. We lived separate from God, and then he saved us. And so that salvation is wide open to every abomination doer. And so we don't have an us and them mentality. However, we do know what an abomination is. And if somebody flaunts their abomination, then certainly you just, it's like, oh, that's horrible. And it does. It feels bad. And I just, you know, even just recently, just, you know, in situations to where I was just around party people. You know, you're around party people. And you just say, oh, Lord, you know, help me to be that shining light. Help me to minister to these people. Help me to open my mouth the way you want me to open my mouth. Help me to be loving and compassionate in all of this. But, Lord, I got to confess to you, I feel yucky. It feels gross. But as gross as I feel in a room of drunk people, for instance, this is just a for instance, they feel just as gross as soon as I pull the Bible out. And they go, ah, ooh, you know, get away. It's funny, it's the sinful nature. It all started back when you were in school. You were just in first grade. And there was one kid that had his hair all just perfect, and his shirt was tucked in, and he sat like this at his desk. You know, and you couldn't figure it out, but you hated him. I don't. Why do I hate that guy? He's got to go. He's just got to go. You know, meanwhile, the teacher is just saying, oh, you're such a good student. Now he's really got to go. And I don't, it's just a part of our sin nature. So don't be surprised when, you know, as Jesus said, you know, they persecuted me. They're going to persecute you. They're not going to like you for walking straight. Yeah, that's just the way it is. Some of these Proverbs, it's funny. It doesn't really tell us what to do. It just tells us the way it is.